Okay, the next speakers are Thomas Anglade and Thierry Berthier. Thomas is a maths engineer with 18 years of experience in IE and in R&D, and currently is the head data scientist in iTrust. And Thierry Berthier is a lecturer and a researcher, a member of chair of the Cyber Defense Saint-Cyr, and co-director of lots of different groups. They're going to talk to you about their work based on a novel embedding-based framework improving the user and entity behavior analysis.
Hello to everybody. Firstly, I work with iTrust, software publisher specialized in cybersecurity. Our issue, the issue we deal with is cyber detection. How can we, as data scientists, apply methods of artificial intelligence to detect anomalies in the computer networks of our clients? The work that we want to present today with Thierry is a downbedding work. It's a framework of representation that allows us to go from log data on firewalls, for instance, to represent these data in a space that is visual and can be used to detect anomalies. That is what we want to. This is the main contribution of AI in cyber detection, is detecting anomalies. I'm happy to present this because it shows that we have managed good collaboration between this public sphere and private sphere, both integrating the Thierry's expert knowledge on the cyber area, cyber domain. We've also worked with the LIPSIX, with Christophe Denis, who was unable to make it with us today, who brought us a lot of added value in the algorithmic and machine learning area. And then the advantage for us in the private sector is that we have concrete cases and simulated attacks, or real ones, amongst our clients, and we can confront all of this in order to develop an IA system that allows us to face up some of the problems we are dealing with. So the work we're presenting is user and entity behavior analysis. What it means is that we are looking at the users and the entities that are within a network, found in a network, we analyze their behavior, and when there's abnormal behavior, we can flag up an anomaly. So what I was saying is that, to start with, the question is, how do we apply AI and machine learning in cybersecurity? It's not easy, for a simple reason that artificial intelligence is complex, very specific skills, and cybersecurity as well. And the issue is, as data scientists, what we have to deal with is bringing these two together. And in order to do that, in AI today in cybersecurity, you need a lot of experience and knowledge of the area of the specific. It's a very open domain with specificities. We absolutely need to be able to confront the mathematical models with experienced experts. It's difficult to have qualified data today. Anybody, data scientists who've worked on data sets, qualified data sets, it's very difficult to get them with attacks, specific attacks, to be able to say at that point such and such a system was attacked and this was the type of attack. It's difficult to get histories of attacks that have been that our clients have been subjected to. So what we do is we simulate them. Pen testers who come into a system, who attack it, we look at how it happens in the data. It's already, we look at what it's, how it manifests itself with the data, and then we find the algorithms that allow us to detect these attacks. So once we have that, we need skills, theoretical skills in statistical learning. And the big issue, the big problem is how to calibrate the model so that you need a lot of proximity between the data scientists who know about learning, and the cyber analysts who can tell us that is that type of attack is demonstrated by such and such data evolution, data situation. So we need to set up an open system . We worked on firewall to set up an open system that would help analysts to detect anomalies. What we observed is that on the firewall part and the observations that we started out with is that we have important data volumes between 1 and 10 gigabytes per day per firewall. So we have SOX teams that are often overworked. Their work is to analyze these 10 gigabytes per day and need to be able to say this and such and such behavior is an anomaly, deviant. And then, as we have trouble finding data sets that are well categorized, validated, we need to do UBA. We aren't necessarily going to put data sets, input data with known attacks, but we're going to understand normal behavior in order to determine what is abnormal. So what we want to do also is to find artificial intelligence that is not a black box, closed, but is open. People who are experts and can analyze things and look at it and provide it information. The solution we provide is a framework that allows data scientists and pen testers to work together so that you have visual results and a space in which it is easy to understand the evolution of a network, visualize what's happening, and then in the end, in order to help move forward, get pen tester who simulate attacks on the network. We look at how these attacks are translated in our mathematical space of downbedding that we built, and then we understand together what kind of vulnerability we have and how to detect the attacks and when is the network behaving normally and when is it behaving abnormally. So this is a diagram that shows the principle of the solution. What we are saying is that we have firewall data that manifest themselves in the form of a graph, a mathematical graph. Firewall is a translation of communications between IPs, source ones and destinations ones, lots and lots of messages like that. It's a graph with IP peaks and dips that are the volume and nature of messages. And that graph evolves over time. And our method is to look for a representation of all the IPs that of this graph that may be visual, two-dimensional. That representation should be able to evolve over time, and at some point, if our progression is good, it evolves over time, it's normal. And when our pen tester simulates an attack on the network, we will see how that attack is translated, how the representation is deformed, and what happened within the network. And that will help us flag up an anomaly. And so the idea, once again, is to use that in order to give pen testers and data scientists the opportunity to work together. What we're doing, we have formalized the problem. What it means is that we are looking for a system to coordinate the two. The question is, I've got IP addresses that communicate with each other, and I want to summarize that in space. So for a given IP address for a given period of time, I'm going to look at the behavior of the IP address. I'm going to give it two coordinates, X and Y, that can be represented in a two-dimensional format, and over time, I'm going to see what it gives and determine what's happening on the network. Once I've said that, I need to add a few properties to the space. There are four that seem fairly natural. Temporal smoothness property. What I'm saying is that I do not want the positions of my IP addresses in the representation space to change too quickly over time, unless there is an anomaly. I want everything to be gradually, the evolution, the change to be gradual, and to follow it smoothly. I have a property of network embedding, which is to say, fairly naturally, if I have two IP addresses that interact a lot on the network in reality, then I want their coordinates to be close to each other in the embedding to materialize the fact that they are connected. Then there is a latent homophily property. IPs that are close to each other in the representation space must interact more in reality than distanced IPs. Then the fourth one is if the nature of a relationship between two IPs is close to the nature of the relationship between two other IPs, the same number of messages, the same port communications, approximately the same data volume of data being transferred, then I want the representation of these relations to be close. That's the relationship that we set. That's the system that we set up. It's a combination of three major bricks, blocks. Graph theory, modelized, modelizing these firewall data. Secondly, it's the embedding with an algorithm that Thierry's going to be presenting at Node2Vec. He's going to be talking about it, that is designed to find representations of graph representations. Once we have found the right representations, you have a problem to, you have the issue of reducing the dimensions. I'll let you take over, Thierry. So we looked at which were the best tools available to represent a form of projection. When we talk about embedding, we looked for the right word in French, but we couldn't find any good translation, so we're continuing with the word embedding. It's a projection, but also a compression of information. So we looked at several solutions, and we found that Node2Vec was the best way of doing what we wanted to do. Node2Vec, if we look at its past history, is an extension of the frame Word2Vec, which is known since 2013, which allows us to vectorize text in natural language processing, which is very frequently used, dates back to 2013. Except therefore, at the time, the idea is that phrases within a given at a given point in a center in a phrase, we could predict the what came before and after it, and by transforming the words as a corpus, as a proximity, as a whole, WHOLE of proximity. At the end of 2016, two Stanford researchers put out an article presenting Node2Vec. It was a real generalization because what we could suddenly do is go further than just phrases. Phrases are. Could be a graph oriented with no cycle, but with a classic graph, it's far more complex than a phrase. A phrase is a very simple graph. The idea is in 2016. The great idea came up to consider a graph as, and in order to explore it, instead of just using the classic interpretation methods that is completely inoperative in terms of complexity for big graphs. So we use machine learning on it, and we're going to do embedding. We're going to compress the information of the graph and set up a process for learning the graph. Node2Vec looks at the peaks, the nodes, and from one node, is going to go and explore in the surrounding, not any old way. An attempt was made with 10-pole deep wall, with double haphazard explorations, with a whole lot of different nodes without any opportunity of going back, if only accidentally. That was a problem with deep wall. Node2Vec solved that with hyperparameters that were much more interesting, that helped us control the return to the original node, original peak. So you can control the return to the original point, departure point, and control also the ways that other nodes that were not yet explored could be explored. It's very smart as an approach, and it completely, it gives a lot of positive things to be done afterwards. The difference between DeepWall and Node2Vec, Node2Vec is going to take account of the surrounding, of what surrounds the graph in its embedding projected part. That's important. It means we don't need to go exploring in a haphazard way, but can be done in it doesn't have to be big ones, can be done in smaller context compared to DeepWall that needs to be explored in lengths of 40 to 50. That's the parameter, the optimal parameter given by DeepWall. 40 to 50, there's no point using that we need explorations of 4 to 5 length. We need these smaller explorations in order to respect the surroundings. So all the ingredients were brought together. Every time this exploration is determined, then we find the same phrases as in Word2Vec. Word2Vec can be applied in order to obtain the graph projection. I have tried to simplify. Word2Vec is a model that is a classic gram. We know what to do behind it. It's a lot of different applications, and it's well controlled. I'll let you continue. To show you what it gives in terms of results, what we did is, what is the parameters of the algorithm that is will correspond best to the type of behavior and the type of attack that we are going to provoke on our data? So we've called it tuning, the sort of profession tuning of the parameters depending on the length of the random explorations. We are talking about exchanges that are IP-IP communication graphs that from IP to IP. Most of the time, they are transferred on a length, on a phrase of length one, to another IP. And sometimes there are longer routes, and we're going to exceed 4 or 5 in terms of the length of data transit. When we were at 5 in terms of length of phrase, maximum length of phrase, and that's amply sufficient to detect the type of behavior that we're looking for. The results that are obtained for, we had some fairly good results. Two types of attacks were simulated, more or less complex. We based on the Mitre framework, what we do is we simulate different kinds of attack, and we look at how they are translated into our space of representation, our embedding space. First of all, we did that with a discovery network, discovering a network via port scan. We didn't put up the results here because it's too obvious, and so it's detected without any problems. It's also worked very well. We revised the speed, reduced the speed so that the firewall wouldn't block the communication. Port scan from outside, from an attacker, to within a network while reducing the speed. That does not flag up the firewall. We want to detect things that the firewall doesn't pick up. So we tested more complex things with a certain amount of rebound. We tested attacks on botnets control with exfiltration of data. CNC botnets with data exfiltration, a form of attack like APT format with such a format, we can want to get exfiltrate data from the network. If I've given myself the right accesses, I'm going to be able to get the data out without being blocked. But if I have good accesses, then I'm going to compromise machines within the network, and I'm going to ask each of them to give me to exfiltrate a certain amount of data, a little piece of data, without the DNS being able to spot it. It's going to not be flagged up. So visually, this is what we see on the left. The first graph is a representation of 1 hour. 1 hour of activity, network activity, and we see that in the middle, the two green circles are the vectorial representation of an IP, public IP, outside of the network, and the DNS that are very close. The DNS communicates a lot with the outside. And then we see that there's two sub-networks, categories of IPs, that are on the bottom on the left that communicate a lot together. This representation gives us IPs that tend to send out data, and those that tend to receive data in green. On the left, it's a normal representation. Then when you do our exfiltration on the right, you see that this was spotted proportionally the size of the circles between IPs, DNS IPs external that grow because they are sending out, exfiltrating the information, the data to the outside. That's logical. What's interesting in this representation, we see that all the IPs that normally communicate with each other, which were fairly close to the DNS but not right so close, suddenly they're coming together around the DNS and sending a little bit of information. They're all sending a little bit of information, and this information is by rebound, the DNS is exfiltrating it to the outside. So that shows clearly on that kind of attack. Our representation allows us visually to say, hey, there's something bizarre happening here. And then with the SOC analysis, he can take it, he look at this representation and look at the positioning of the IPs and understand that such and such an IP are close together because they are exchanging a lot. And he will be able to question the positioning of the IPs and say, if this IP, such and such an IP, has a function that he's aware of, is closing it, is bringing it, coming close to another IP when there's no particular reason, that's an anomaly. And there'll be an artificial intelligent tool that is open to cyber security. So to conclude rapidly, we have representation phase that allows us to follow closely the activity of IP addresses over time, detect simple attacks, but also more complex ones. For us, it was something that was very positive to be able to. We are working on more and more sophisticated attacks and spread out over time. We'd like to progress in terms of algorithms. In terms of this property that we call temporal smoothness, if there is no anomaly, the change is fairly fluid and smooth over time. It's almost a visual representation, like a video of the state of the network and when things are working normally. So we're working on that aspect of things and looking at keeping algorithms. The one I talked about earlier that allows us to integrate better the characteristics of communication in the modelization. The complexity comes from the fact that we have a lot of communication ports, different ones. Between 1,000 and 2,000 ports are used. So there is a lot of different information to be integrated and that we need to integrate into the more complex patterns. Thank you. I'd just like to add a word about this topic. There's the article in CSER. It's also a chapter in a book by Esther Wiley, an American publisher, that asked us for 140 pages, complexities of cybersecurity. It's going to focus on these topics of embedding associated with complexity. Thank you. So the question on the left. Thank you for this presentation. I have two questions. At the beginning, you said you presented your graph model. I didn't understand what data you were putting on the peaks. If you take several data, it's an hypergraph, but then you only used one graph. First question. I have another question that was, would Node2Vec support a hypergraph? But I don't really know how that could be done. My last question is a question I often asked, is a question of scale. If I use your algorithm on an operator of vital data, where will the problems arrive? Will there be problems? I would suppose that things will block, but that's my intuition. But where? I'm trying to answer the three questions. What do we put on the peaks? That's a good question. You can put a lot of things there. What's natural to put in? I take two IPs and I put the quantity of bits that they have sent to each other. That's the most natural. That's how we started out. And the bytes that, in that representation of the bytes, I do not integrate the communication ports. They aren't aggregated. I would then total the bytes. So we build graphs with different natures. In some, it's just the bytes that have been sent. Others have one graph per port. That can be done. We can also integrate the number of ports that have been used between two IPs to communicate. So in the end, if we had two graphs, one with the number of bytes sent and one with the number of total communication ports used, we had overall things that allowed us to detect an anomaly. And this is open. And this is what I was saying in the conclusion. We demonstrate the nature of the competition better. You must mix. When you have two graphs, you're decoupling the hypergraph. The two values per peak, I don't understand how you recouple afterwards. No, here we're talking about two different graphs. They are isomorphic. They are isomorphic. If the two IPs have communicated, if you take the number of bytes, the time, the frequency that you want, the structure of the graph is the same. That's very important. They are isomorphic. Yes. Yes, you can have two different forms of embedding, one with number of bytes and one with the number of ports. But the question would be to achieve the same thing with... There's two things we should do. Do the same thing with hypergraphs in order to represent all of the communications, and then have an embedding of explorations that are temporal and that continuous in time, over time. And then we would have represented the total complexity. And what about the passage to scale? The problem we have, I don't understand what the issue would be. It's just a question of performance, isn't it? Data comes in continuously, and our algorithm must be able to calculate representations fast enough, and that the temporal window should be slid in such a way to have continuous embedding. If you increase the size of the graph, you will increase the size of the sentences, of the phrases, maybe excessively increase their size. Won't it then take too much time to converge? That's a very interesting question. The interest of Node2Vec is the scale issue. It's conceived to deal with big graphs, and the embedding space, we have sufficiently reduced the dimension in order to cope with the data. It's the very meaning of this framework. As for hypergraphs and graphs, we have another tool that's called Graph2Vec that takes a graph overall, using it, considering it as a unit, as a single object, and do a graph-to-graph process. Node2Vec, Graph2Vec, in order to gives us two different representations. But the passage to scale, the transfer to scale, we can do big, big graphs with it. As long as the calculations follow behind, there's no problem. Are there any more questions? I'm going to come back to something that's fairly down to earth. Very good presentation. I want to congratulate you. Thank you. If we take, for instance, an operational mode like what we had in 2018 with exfiltration channel by email that sends emails along with those sent by users, will it be spotted by the firewall? I'm trying to think it through. So if we take an exfiltration of data by attached files with emails, is that what you're saying? Yes, that's it. In the firewall, what we have is data of NetFlow type. We have an IP, a source IP, a destination IP, and communication ports. So I would say that the email must be parametered on certain specific ports. We can focus or even create graphs for certain ports just to follow the activity of the port that is linked to that email. What about the application level and extract between the application of communication between individuals rather than staying at the level of the network and losing the interest of anomalies in the area of user behaviors? It seems fairly generic in terms of techniques. Why go to the area where you see less clearly what attacks are made of? Yes, it's true. We can apply it to a whole lot of different areas of communication in one-to-one relationships. We're going to have to interrupt this debate. Every time we'd like to prolong, but we are held by timing. So thank you again. Thank you, Thierry.